All right. We're in a study and going to make a little headway today, I think. I want to talk about, in this next one, we're going to have a change of presidents and so forth, and presidents making decisions and trying to influence Israel. That's kind of what we're talking about. I just thought I would remind you of this verse over there in Daniel 2. This is a prayer of Daniel's. It's starting in verse 20. Daniel 2:20, Daniel's praying. Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his." Daniel, by the way, has several prayers in his prophecy, and these are good prayers to pattern your prayers after. He starts by always praising God, and he always mentions some attribute of God, and then he'll usually ask something. But here's in this next verse some attributes he names about God. And he did it in the first verse as well, for wisdom and might are his. And then he continues in verse 21, and he, God, changeth the times and the seasons. Look at this, though. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness and the light that dwelleth with him. God knows a lot of things, doesn't he? And he does a lot of things. He handles the change of times and seasons, it says. But it also says this in there, very important to remember, it's God who removes kings, and it's God who sets up kings. It's God who sets up the leader of a country. It's God who removes a leader of a country. That's what God does. He does it based on his own sovereignty. And so just, we'll keep that in mind as we go through this next couple events. We're in an unusual study, I know that. We'll get back to something a little more normal as we go, but still in this a little bit different kind of a study. And I had all that on one slide, and it was getting difficult to read, and so I put it on two slides. So these are the first six events that we've already covered, and just as a reminder, these are just some, took a few weeks here to talk about some moments in time where the U.S., especially at the beginning, let's say in the Carter administration, but the first one I have up here was Bush, but putting pressure on Israel so that they would give up some of their land. And at a peak moment in time, all of a sudden the U.S. then has an event, and these events are not just thunderstorms, but in fact, usually, in every case, it's something extremely significant. The worst hurricane or the worst flood or something that's significant, God seemingly trying to get our attention. If I were to have some time at the end, I'm going to show you a verse where we can certainly look at this kind of pattern, God having done that in the past. Actually, it's a passage, and I doubt I'm going to have time, but if I do, I have it ready. If not, we're going to look at it next week. I just want you to know God deals sometimes with the nations. He always deals with the individual. God cares about you. He deals with you one-on-one, but he deals with the nations as well. And I'm going to point that out. I'm talking with regard to a big event. God also deals with the nations. And so I'll point that out as we go. Probably going to get to that next week. So here's how far we progressed, and we got through Hurricane Katrina and the global financial crisis last week. And then remember I said, who can guess on April 20th, 2010, what happened? What would be the next event? Did anybody come up with anything? So it's something that's the worst of it's something we haven't seen before as far as these events, and it's the worst one we've ever had. But as soon as I start telling you, you'll remember this because we're getting into a period of time, most of us in here of the age where we can remember 14 or so years ago, and we're getting to the period of time where it's pretty close in our memory, so when I start talking about it, you'll remember. But it was the worst ecological damage that we've ever seen. And so I'll point that out. This is event number 11. Well, let me just start, though, by saying it was January 2009. We got a new president, and Obama, before he became president, he gave some pre-election promises to Israel. Most of the time, the topic of Israel will come up before, you know, you vote on somebody. Just like this particular election that we've got going, both candidates, for whatever, you know, however you want to believe, that's up to you, say they're going to support Israel. But in every election, because it's important to a lot of our citizens, us and a lot of citizens, that we support Israel. We know why, because of Genesis 12. They're always asked that, and they nearly always say, and Obama did say he's going to support Israel. But when he was elected, obviously, our country took a strong move to the left. So your left is this side. We went this way, didn't we? Your side. Left. I mean, we took a strong move to the left when he was elected. Now, at the same time, Israel, about the same time, Israel elected Benjamin Netanyahu. Now, Netanyahu had been in and out over the years, many times as prime minister, I mean, since then, and before this. So he's been around. He dealt with Clinton and so forth a little bit. But Netanyahu, he's on the right. And so let's just say we're rocking along and both nations are like this. After this particular time of election with Obama and Netanyahu, what happened politically was this. I mean, we moved far apart, didn't we? And Obama, in fact, he sent some people over to Israel to try to influence when Netanyahu came up for re-election. He sent some people over there to try to influence so that Netanyahu would not get re-elected. Our current administration has also done some of those shenanigans. Now, what did we read in that? When you see that, you as Christians, that this is the reason I try to bring some, not all the time, but sometimes current events into our thinking here, because we read the Bible, and we need to just try to always think about it and apply it when something's happening. What does God say about that? And what did we just read in Daniel 2 that who reserves the right to set up the president and to take them down? God, right? That's what we read in Daniel chapter 2. It's God that does that. So what does God think about somebody off in another country who decides, no, I don't want them to be president. I want this person to be president. I mean, and of course, when it's Israel, it's even going to definitely get God's attention. And both the Obama administration and the Biden administration, or some people call the old Biden administration, have tried to get rid of Netanyahu. And so this is not going well. Now, Clinton had also... he mostly did not deal with Netanyahu. In his day, it was mostly Rabin and some others. But for a while there, they had a little overlap. And Clinton, he was used to pushing the other guys around. You know, he made Rabin go, you know, the deals and that he did. And we talked about all of them, so I won't repeat them here. But Clinton was used to pushing them around. And he got Netanyahu in there, and Netanyahu has proven then and now and over the years he's not going to be pushed around. And so he hung in there against Clinton. And Clinton, you can read it, you can find the quote yourself where he said he's unwilling to compromise. And he was upset. Now I'm going to just give you one. This is not one of my events. I'm just going to give you a tidbit, okay? A little tidbit about Clinton. wasn't this particular moment. There came a time, though, when Congress invited Netanyahu to speak. He was in town. He was in Washington. He was scheduled, the aides scheduled him to have lunch with the president. So Netanyahu and Bill Clinton were supposed to have lunch. And Clinton was mad at Netanyahu and would not have lunch with him and just left him hanging. That very day that he shunned the prime minister of Israel, the Monica Lewinsky scandal broke that very day. And Clinton, what became our second president to ever been impeached. Now, you say that was just a coincidence. Maybe so. Don't know. I'm just telling you the facts. Just giving you the facts that very day. So, let's keep going here. We'll get back to Obama. I just thought I'd throw that in there. You know, when a president, you know, they get elected and they make a lot of speeches, of course, to the country. But what is watched a lot of times is the first time a president goes out of the country, what's the first country he visits? It's always significant, and he has a reason. It's kind of his foundational foreign policy. And so you watch that, and you see, because sometimes they do go to Israel to say, look, Israel's going to be our priority, going to be our good partner. Sometimes they might go, and they don't have to go to Israel. God doesn't demand that by any means. Sometimes they might go to Asia if that's important of the day or time of the day or so forth. Barack Obama went to Egypt to speak to the Muslim Brotherhood. And that tells you a little bit of something about how he immediately ran things. And he was given, this tells you a little bit about the rest of the world at the time. He gave one speech and was given the Nobel Peace Prize. Now, the Nobel Peace Prize used to have quite a hurdle. In the old days, to get there, you had to, in fact, when something, it had to be something, you remember when Trump, and I'm not sure, by the way, God is 100% behind the Abraham Accords. I used to think it was good, and I'm for peace for Israel, but for some reason, I kind of feel like God's not 100% behind that, but Trump did the Abraham Accords. Humanly speaking, to get that many nations to recognize Israel should have been a Nobel Peace Prize. But they wouldn't give it to him for political reasons. And so it's sad to see that the whole Nobel thing has become so political. You give one guy the Nobel Peace Prize for a speech, and another, you don't do it because you don't like him, even though he did something that wasn't done, in decades previously. Second speech for Obama was Turkey, another Muslim country, and he completely shunned Israel. And so this kind of thing had not been done. And, of course, who was also along in the Biden administration was this fellow here. And you recognize him. He's got his little hat on, and he's sitting there behind the Star of David. But we all know that he's proven to be just as obstinate towards Israel as the Obama administration. And it all started with 70 AD, which is a long time ago, 70 AD, when Israel was driven out of the land, the Romans drove them out, God had prophesied it, Jesus himself. If you look, when Jesus rode the donkey from Bethany into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, you know, Jesus started weeping when he got close to Jerusalem because he knew in one generation later, about 40 years later, what was going to happen. And what did happen, Jesus prophesied it, Ezekiel had prophesied it, the Romans are going to come in, and they did. Destroy Jerusalem, destroyed the temple such that one stone was not left upon another, just like Jesus had said. And Israel never got its sovereignty back until 1948. From AD 70 to 1948, Israel, yes, some people would show up in the land from time to time, but they were not a sovereign nation until 1948. Well, God also had prophesied in Ezekiel and some other places that at some point he was going to bring them back, didn't he? He's going to bring them back and regather them. And so God started the nation in one day in 1948, exactly as prophesied, and he's bringing them back. And so what do they have to do? I mean, the country had been destroyed. They have to build things, don't they? People got to live somewhere. And so the government issues permits, just like happens in our, in our city today. What have we done? Those of you that have lived here over the last 10 years, let's say, just 10 years. I mean, what have we done in this city? The city has issued permits and we've built houses, haven't we? Why is that? Because people came and showed up from California and places, right? And And so what do? Do you leave them in the street, or do you issue permits and let a contractor build a house and they buy the house and now they're part of the city? That's a normal process. And Israel was following a normal process. I mean, they've got to have places. And so they've been following this thing all of this time. And Obama wakes up one day and decides, no, I don't want any more permits issued. And he and Biden were mad. And I'm just going to tell you, this is very normal stuff here. New neighborhoods they were building. And Israel and Netanyahu, you can read about it, they were quite confused at first and didn't understand. Netanyahu came over to see and said, I don't understand the problem here. This is normal stuff. We're just trying. We got people that are moving back to Israel, and we got to accommodate them. And Netanyahu, I'm not saying that he would know, but God was doing it. And by the way, God is still doing it. God's using a lot of different approaches. You know, I mentioned this to you before, but just keep it in mind. The whole Russian war and all that probably God's accomplishing many things through that. But one of the things he's accomplishing is, in fact, that he's moving the Jews and did plenty of them from Russia and from the Ukraine going back home. Now, this is a map of Jerusalem and the boundaries and so forth. This blue part is the part that is claimed for Israel. And these are kind of the boundaries around Jerusalem. This is called the West Bank. I use the term just because that's what the news organizations use, but it's not a good term. It's really, Jerusalem is in Judea. It's really Judea and Samaria that make up the West Bank. And so this is where they are. And this red or whatever color that is there, I'll call it kind of a reddish color, that color, that is where the Palestinians are. And so they live there, and so this is creates this conflict. And you see these blue triangles that are around. Those blue triangles are new neighborhoods that have popped up that Israel is building those apartments in. And, of course, you can see that it intermingles there close to where the Palestinians are. And so Obama was really siding with Abbas and the Palestinians, and Obama's temperature was rising during this thing. He was not happy, and he wrote a letter. And he said this in his proclamation. He made the decision for the whole country, for our whole country. The U.S. will not, I'm directly quoting here, will not support Israel's expansion and will leave decisions about this to the U.N. I mean, basically just said, like, I'm going to wash my hands up. We're not supporting what's happening over there, and we're leaving all the decisions to the U.N. He wrote that letter, that change. It's a big change in the United States policy, a big change. He wrote it on April 20th, 2010. April 20th, 2010 is when that letter went out. Have you heard of this company? British Petroleum. Now who remembers what happened? Yeah, okay. This is the Deepwater Horizon, and this is a well that British Petroleum had in the Gulf, and this thing they had they drilled down almost 20,000 feet, so over 3 miles, nearly 4 miles it would be. I mean, that's pretty deep, isn't it? I mean, that thing was deep, and they put it right in the Gulf. Now, it's not the only one in the Gulf. There's other things in the Gulf. But what else is at the Gulf? I mean, what else is the Gulf? Is fishing, right? And commercial fishing. I mean, this is a commercial. I mean, it's a big business in the Gulf, and big part of the U.S. economy, especially in that part of our country. Well, BP put that rig there. They were happy about it. It was kind of a big deal. It cost them $560 million. Now, that's a lot of money now, but that's really a lot of money in those days on one rig. And so they built it, and there's a movie on this, and you've probably seen it, and you probably, again, at our age, we remember this all thing very well, but they found these chunks of rubber that were coming up. See the chunks are in the gauges, you know, that monitor the thing were going haywire. Is haywire a word? Okay, good. I didn't know if that's really a word. Everybody understands it. If you come from another language, you might not understand haywire. Haywire hooks the hay. You know, used to pick up the bale of hay. That's haywire. I don't know how I got on that. It just came to me. I don't know if that's a word. They were trying to do everything. For a while, that was brewing. They were trying to do everything they could to counter the pressure. And they used seawater, and they were trying to do some stuff for a little while, but it was to no avail. Of course, the thing blew. 11 people lost their life, so that was a tragedy. But the whole rig sunk 2 days later. And now it's a big problem because it's so deep. I should have looked. I didn't really know exactly where it broke. I don't know if it broke at the bottom or probably not, probably at the top. Anyway, it was difficult to cap, and it leaked for 87 days, and it poured almost 5 million barrels of oil in the Gulf and created the worst ecological disaster we had ever had. I mean, and it cost British Petroleum billions. I mean, there was, and of course, they said, if you remember the guy on TV, the guy came over and, you know, this first time, I may remember like the first interview the guy gave. I mean, just very, you know, how many of you know some of my ancestors are from England. I'm not being critical here, but they can be pretty staunch if they want to be. And the guy was, and I mean, it was very, so he tried to warm up and it was, the whole thing was a public relations disaster. From the very beginning, and then they realized what it's going to cost to clean all of it up, and they tried to back out as best they could, but there was no getting out of it. The U.S. was all over them, and so they had to spend billions. But it was a huge, not only public relations and the cleanup, but a lot of other things were lost. The economy was greatly damaged, and we had a beach, and there were signs everywhere. British Petroleum became one of the most unpopular companies in our nation and around because everybody's used to the beach and couldn't even go to the beaches. Not only the economic loss there, but then of course we had a loss of wildlife, scores of birds, fish. And other wildlife, even today, 2024, the long-term environmental impacts are still being worked on and still being studied because they're still finding issues with that damage. It was the worst ecological disaster we had ever had. The marshes, still damaged. And so it was a huge thing. Now, I'm just asking you, is it a coincidence that the U.S. made a major change? By the way, not only that letter, but Obama had worked a concession out of Israel that they effectively reduce their sovereignty over Eastern Jerusalem. And so there was that as well. And so God, I'm just telling you, this is another in the list of things that happen the exact same day. Now, this next part is, to me, doesn't qualify as one that was by itself, but I'm going to throw it out there as well. At the same time, April of 2010, the same time, because it wasn't just the U.S. Remember, I said last time, Europe especially had gotten involved degrading the relationship with Israel and siding with the Palestinians. At the same time that happened, this volcano in Iceland erupted. You might remember that. And it erupted in Iceland. 250 metric tons of ash went in the sky. And then it just so happened. Now, this is over Iceland, 250 metric tons of ash. Just so happened, the wind started blowing a certain way, and it covered Ash just sort of scooted over and covered Europe. All flights were canceled because it was unsafe to fly. That ash would the first plane or two started noticing that ash was getting in the engines and causing issues, and so so planes couldn't fly, and all flights were canceled. And you know, here's the ash. And you might say that's not such a big deal. It's not, but it caused a lot of people. It caused a lot of issues. For me, I was in Europe at the time. I was in Europe on business, and it was a trip that among my own crew, you know. And so we were at some labs and fields. I was in Belgium, and so it was kind of one of those trips where I was dressed casually. And that happened. I couldn't even see it. They said, we got this ash and we can't fly. I went out and it looked a little, glossy, maybe you kind of say, but I couldn't see any ash or anything. But up there where the planes fly, I guess it was bad. And I was grounded and couldn't leave. All the flights for some weeks in there. And so I was scheduled to be done with my meeting when that happened. And I had to stay, and then I was scheduled to be home for a while, and then I was scheduled to go back. In those days, I traveled a lot, and I was scheduled to go back to Germany. But when I went back to Germany, I had to meet with the CEO of the company. And so I was supposed to be dressed. In those days, when we showed up, the CEO of the company, we had to dress like this. Well, I didn't have any of these clothes with me. I had my other stuff, and I had to do, sorry to complain, I had to do the one thing I hate to do, and that's shop. And I had to shop in Europe where I didn't really know, I managed, okay, I managed. But, it was something. It was, so all of the hotels were immediately full. I managed to keep mine, but all the prices, they can say we got laws against gouging. Europe doesn't have any law like that, I don't think, because the prices for everything went up because people were, we were grounded. Everybody was grounded. And we were there a good little while, and I don't remember how many days or I would tell you, but I know it was long enough that my company, because the stuff wouldn't move. It just kind of sat. The wind blew it over there, and it just sat there. And so they called me one day and said, certain employees are out of position, and we got some issues with that, and so we're going to, you could fly certain size planes that could fly at a lower level. You could fly those after a while. And they said, we're going to fly a different size jet in there and pick you up and get you home. And so we scheduled it for 2 or 3 days later whenever they could. And by then, the wind had come and blew the stuff away, and so I just took a commercial flight. I'm not trying to give you a sad story. I'm trying to say stuff was happening in there. And a lot of flights grounded. And it was really, I believe, just God saying, I can shut the whole thing down if I want to, because that's what happened. The whole thing got shut down. In April of 2010, when everybody decided we're going to halt the construction of Israel, these ecological things started happening. The worst mess we had ever had as far as in Israel. And so that's the next one. Now let me kind of go to one more. Let's keep going. That one took a little longer than I thought, but I still think I can manage this one. So the attention, like God said, in fact, is going to turn to Jerusalem. And all Israel, yes, is in view, but I tell you, the battle for Jerusalem. And you have a picture here of the Western Wall, Israel flag. There it is. And, Tower of David, of course, and the Dome of the Rock. So there's this verse. I'm going to read it for you in case you can't see it. But in Zechariah 12, we covered Zechariah not too long ago, Zechariah 12:2, "Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all the people round about, when they shall be in the siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. Now, that verse has not found full fulfillment yet. God will continue what he started, but it is in fact already started. I mean, Jerusalem is quite an issue. Netanyahu kept building and kept building and kept building. If you were around and we were paying attention to that time, you know that he kept building, and Obama kept getting mad and more angry. And he made that issue of those permits a big problem and a big issue. So I've talked about that. There's a law. Let me back up. That's Jerusalem again. Israel has this law. Now, they're their own country. They can make their own laws, right? And they have this law that said, we claim a unified Jerusalem as our capital. I mean, that should be simple enough. We've got a law in the U.S. Washington, D.C. is our capital, right? That law has been around a while, and they brought it up again, and it made a lot of people angry. I'm going to just show you this map. I had the computer draw up these maps because I couldn't find one like I wanted. So this is the Mideast. You might say, "What? What is that?" It's Mike's watercolors or something, but. So this is the Saudi Peninsula, and that right there is Egypt. And that's the Mediterranean Sea, Turkey, and so forth. Here's Israel right here. And so the darker it gets, the more people that live there. So my point here, I'm going to give you a closer up now. It's a different color, but it's the same thing. Here's Israel, a little closer up. And people live here so this is Saudi Arabia. People live here in Egypt around the Nile. Notice they don't live here because it's a desert. They live around the Nile. They live in Turkey. They live in Iran, so forth. Notice this spot right here, top of the Sinai Peninsula, just beside the Gaza Strip. Nobody lives there. And it's not any worse. I've been down there. I've not been in Sinai, but I've been in that area of southern Israel, quite a few places. And, you know, I'm not saying there's probably reasons people don't live there. I get you there. But they're living in Gaza, which is just the same. And it's an arid, dry place. My point is, there's plenty of places. And also around Jerusalem, if you look, around Jordan, there are plenty of places that people could live. But no, they got to have Jerusalem. God said, I'm going to make it that way. And that's becoming, in fulfillment. But they got to have Jerusalem. And yet, you know, there's plenty of places that if people would keep calm. But they wouldn't keep calm. And so the United Nations, when that Israel law came public, it had been passed earlier, but came sort of public, the United Nations passed six measures to counter Israel's consolidation against Jerusalem. Resolution 478 of the United Nations said Israel's law is null and void, and they have to move their embassy to Tel Aviv. Now, there's this verse over there, and also in Zechariah 12, verse 9. Zechariah 12, 9. Just listen to this verse and see which side of the fence you want to be on. It shall come to pass in that day that I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. That's what God said. He said, one of these days, I'm going to seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. It's one thing when God says, if you do this, I'm going to punish you. It's another thing when God says, I'm going to seek to destroy you. Now, folks, we ought to think about that verse a little bit. That's a chilling verse. And we're not there yet necessarily in prophecy. He's really, I believe, speaking of the last days when the armies really march against Jerusalem. But it's being set up is sort of my point. And so United Nations makes their law, says, Israel, no, you cannot have Jerusalem as a capital. You have to have Tel Aviv as your capital. And many, when they made that law, many nations had their embassies in Jerusalem and moved them to Tel Aviv. Now, what would we think if the UN made a law and said, no, United States, you cannot have your capital in Washington, D.C. You have to have it in, you know, Los Angeles or some other, you know, place. And we didn't want it there. And they say, well, too bad. What would we think? Do you get my point? I mean, Israel's their own nation. They ought to be able to put their capital where they want. You remember the heartburn it caused in this country when President Trump moved our embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Oh, that was all the heartburn that cost. But Israel's saying, hey, that is our capital. And so it infuriated Obama. It infuriated him. So he announced there will be no peace with Israel until they agree to go back to pre-1967 borders. Now, just to remind you, this is more or less where we are today. So the green being the Palestinians, this is Gaza Strip. This is where the Palestinians live. And this is kind of like pre-1967. Not quite, but that's pretty close. You can tell. He says we need to go back to there. And we're not going to have peace until Israel agrees with that. And he brought Netanyahu over. And you might remember this photo. It's famous. It was in all of, you know, it was published everywhere. They got into it. And they got into it in a press conference. And I saw the thing. I wasn't there live, but I saw it on TV live when it happened. You can find it. If you didn't see it, you can find it easily. Obama got up first, and he said, you got to go back to pre-1967. Netanyahu got up and said, we are not going back. We are not going back. And there's the photo. You can see they were unhappy with each other. And it caught, when Obama did that, it caught the United States off guard. Even Obama's own people were caught off guard that we were striking Israel so in such a negative way, especially publicly. You might remember, if you've been here through this thing the last 3 or 4 weeks, you might remember Mitchell, George Mitchell. He did the Mitchell Report in the Bush administration and so forth. He was a rascal too, and he wanted Israel to give up land and all. He resigned when Obama did that. He just said, that's not right. This is a guy, Democrat, who had been, in my opinion, that Mitchell report was biased against Israel, and yet he resigned. Harry Reid, do you remember him? Harry Reid did everything Obama said. He was the head of the Senate and Pelosi was head of the House. They did everything Obama said. Even Harry Reid denounced what Obama did. Now, you're plowing pretty deep right in there if that happens. No peace with Israel. This all occurred 2011, kind of April 2011, all of 2012. Nothing but just acid spewing, you know, just until Israel gives up their land. So just remember that long period of time, April 2011 and 2012. Well, let me get to the next event, number 12, extreme weather. First thing that happened, this thing started in April, so next thing you know, we've got 1,000 tornadoes that hit all in the same month, April 2011, the southeast. That's the date right there. Just so this is from the Weather Service, April 1st, 2011 through April 21st, 1,000 tornadoes. Now that's tough. What else? We're pressuring Israel. We're mad at Israel. So it's going to go on for a year and a half, a little over actually. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, U.S. gets in a drought. I'm going to just pick out Texas. first, just so, because we live here and we can, I want you to remember 2011. It started out, that's January. Here's April. By the time we get to April, getting pretty dry. The more red, the darker it is, the worse it is. Now you can see it was worse over here in the east, but it's, and this is area right here normally gets 35 inches or so of rain, more or less rain per year. And that's how dry we were in April. Look at this, July. What kind of cotton crop are you going to have right there? Yeah, all our pastures are burned up too. Anything we're trying to produce out here was gone, wasn't it? I mean, if you remember it, it was a devastating time. Cattle numbers down, cotton. We lost all our commodities, all our vegetables. There were major issues with especially the smaller towns who are a little bit more dependent on others for water supply. There were issues there, if you remember. If you lived in Texas during that time and you drove from here to to Sweetwater or something, that period, you look at those ranches, I mean, just dry. October 2011, I mean, we were cooked. Let's look at the U.S. There's August 2011. That's Texas. So, but notice it's starting to spread. Here's the Corn Belt in the southeast and moving to the west. February 2012. Still terrible in Texas. It's going to ease up in Texas, but we're already burned up. It starts to pick up out here in the west, and look again, this is part of the Corn Belt. July 2012. Now this Corn Belt right here. Our breadbasket for food crops is the Corn Belt. Now we produce a lot of vegetables in California. California was burning up. We produce a lot in South Texas. We produce a lot in the South. The Florida, kind of Georgia area as well. But this, when this part of the country burns up, it's a big deal. We not only produce corn there, but we produce soybean there. See if I got another. Yeah, you see what happened in August? Same thing. I mean, just burned up. In fact, I'm not going to have time today, but next week, the biblical example I'm going to give you is a 3-year drought that God put on Israel for a certain issue. Just to show you that what I'm talking about, there's biblical evidence that God does that from time to time. And God gave that part of the world a 3-year drought, and the king of Israel, which I'll go through all this next week, he asked God, what's going on here? And God told him, and the king had to clean it up so that the drought could be relieved. So I'm going to go through that next week just to show you this is kind of what happened. Now you say, well, the southeast hadn't been hit too hard. They had those tornadoes, but yeah, there's October. Yeah, so that God capped it off with Hurricane Sandy. I mean, if you look at this next slide, every part of our country was just smashed with weather. Whether it was tornadoes, whether it was a severe, very, very severe drought. I was in the ag business. I can tell you, we lived through it. It was horrible. And then, of course, Hurricane Sandy, which we know what happens there. So, and that was one of the worst, and I'll finish that up a little bit next week, but that was one of the most severe times, ways that we had treated Israel. And we got, we got several months of very, very severe weather. The company I worked for, because the soybean crop was lost, and at the time we probably, in this country, were growing 80 million acres of soybeans. It's up to 90 by now, I think. About 90 this year, I think. But we're growing, probably that year, we probably had 80 million acres of soybeans. You lose that much protein. Now, the corn we lost as well. Corn's a feed crop, though, and the cattle on feed were short anyway because of the drought. We knew we'd survive that, but we're dependent on protein. Humans are, if the globe has a protein shortage, it's an issue. And we're very concerned that, I mean, because people fight over wars are started over two things, other things as well, but land and food, historically, that's two big things. And we were very concerned if there was going to be a global protein shortage and it would create some real issues. God saw us through it. There was a pretty good crop the next year in Brazil and Argentina. And, you know, we made it through. But, I mean, we were suffering. This country suffered for it. This region suffered for it. But we weren't the only one. Everybody suffered for the thing. I'm out of time. I gave you the whole list. I don't know if you can read it, but just so we get it, you know, that's 12 things, and we're only up to 2011. And so I'll keep going. I'm going to try to get to the point where I'm doing about 3 a week so we can kind of get through it because I don't want to stay on this forever. But next week I'm going to take some time and show you some things scripturally as well. So we'll pick it up like that starting next week. Let's pray. Our Father, we're thankful that you still watch over us, guide us, lead us, and direct us. Lord, we are thankful.